Hello and welcome to the Bingeables Podcast, a podcast for geeky TV junkies where we watch TV shows you just have to binge on. We're your hosts, Chinlin
and Isaac.
And we are back. This is our 101st episode, Isaac.
Yay! Can we add like a sound effect and stuff, or is that too much? That's probably too much.
What, like a champagne popping?
Yeah, something like that. I don't know, little like, you know, those little kazoo things that people do at like birthday parties.
So when we talked about Invincible season one, that was actually our 100th episode. And I remember telling you before we recorded. And then when we started recording, I just forgot.
We both forgot. Yeah. I definitely didn't remember, because if I had, I would have reminded you.
Oh, man. Yeah. So this is our 101st episode, but we're going to treat it like a bonus and just this is a bonus episode and we'll treat it as if it's the 100th.
Sure. Sure, I don't think anyone cares. I think they're like, oh, hey, this one seems interesting.
So, yeah, can you believe it? We have reached 101 episodes.
That's pretty impressive.
We started fall of 2018, so we're almost reaching 3 years. So that's pretty good, because like we started doing episodes every other week last fall, so I think we would have reached 100 by now sooner if we had kept with the weekly. But you know, life happens. You gotta adjust your schedules. Yada yada. We all know this. But hey, guess what? We finally got another Apple Podcast review.
Hooray! No, I'm not being sarcastic. I'm serious. Thank you.
So this is from David M. Wine. This was left on June 3rd, 2021, and I like it, so I'm just going to read it. He or she said, title, very bingeable, and it said, You definitely will not regret binging this show. Chinlin and Isaac are quite the power duo. And I just want to say, I don't know if we're a power duo, but that's very generous. bring liquid hot energy rarely seen in podcasting. Be sure to check them out even if you're not a quote-unquote geek.
That's very nice.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah, I like it too. So thank you so much, David M. Wine. And of course, if you haven't left a review, reviews help us out a lot in the search engines. So please feel free to leave a review on your favorite podcatcher, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, I don't know. No, not Spotify. Stitcher. I know you can leave on Stitcher. I don't know. There's tons. I can't list it all.
Wherever you're getting us from, if they allow you to leave a review, go ahead and do so. That would be awesome.
And of course, before we dive in, I just want to give a quick plug for two other podcasts. Our fellow Podern family folks, Putting On Airs podcast, Airs as in E-Y-R-E-S. They're run by my friends Joe and Ren. Joe and Ren have been guests on the Bingeables before, and recently I was a guest on their podcast, Putting On Airs podcast, and we talked about Hank Green's book, An Absolutely Remarkable Thing. And the sequel actually came out a few months ago, so I haven't read the sequel yet, but we did discuss the first book. So if you're also a book reader, I would recommend checking out their podcast, and you can listen to me guest on there as well. And then secondly, I was also a guest for Brunch with the Hallowells podcast, the Charmed Recap podcast. And it was my second time being on Rob's Rob and Ryan's podcast. So I was recently there to talk about season 6, episode 21. Yeah, Witch Wars. So if you like Charmed or you know someone who likes Charmed, I recommend going there and you can listen to me be on a guest for them as well. So quick plug, I'm done with that. So now let's dive into this episode. What's the next Game of Thrones? So Game of Thrones ended. They wrapped up the series 2 years ago. Season 8 premiered April 2019 and then it ended. They had 8 episodes, so they ended like end of May or early June or something. So it's been 2 years, and pretty much every other streaming platform is trying to capitalize on another fantasy series, another high fantasy series to be exact, that they are putting a lot of money into in hopes of it being the next Game of Thrones of this 2020s decade, so to speak, because Game of Thrones was the 2010s show.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, and there hasn't been a whole lot of news because it kind of just sprinkles in and out. So I had to do a lot of research going into this.
Well, I think that one of the things is that as it was wrapping up, there were probably a lot of studios that were like, okay, we can probably do something that mimics this and maybe we can replicate their success. But then in 2020, coronavirus pandemic comes about and every production company puts production on hold, right? So that's probably why there's so little information. It's like all the projects that would be sort of 2 years along right now are about a year along because there was this huge pause on working on these kinds of projects.
Oh, the cat wants to be with us. Matcha! Hey! Hey, we're recording. Don't worry, we'll give you scritches later. But yeah, so I'm excited to talk about this. I know you're semi-excited just because you weren't a fan of the show, but there's other IP that you did, that you do enjoy.
There are other IPs that I do enjoy, and we'll get to them, I'll hold my comments until we get to each one.
Okay. So what are the characteristics of Game of Thrones? What makes that show so successful and popular and a global phenomenon? What I'm about to list out are kind of like 5 criteria that I thought of as I was doing my research for this discussion. So number one, the next Game of Thrones should have like a vast, almost endless exploration of its characters and worlds. Meaning, so for example, when Game of Thrones was wrapping up, like I remember reading somewhere that HBO had a bunch of spinoff or prequel ideas in mind, and like two kind of really stuck. And then one of them starred Naomi Watts, and that was the one that actually got scrapped. So they went forward with House of the Dragon, which is a prequel series. Well, they were both prequel series, but House of the Dragon will focus on the House Targaryen and will set 300 years into the past. But that's kind of what I mean. There's just so much that you can explore with the characters and the universe that you could possibly have tons of spinoffs or prequels and whatnot. Number two, definitely gray characters. None of them are going to be black and white. None of them are going to be 100% good or 100% bad. They're going to be a mix in between. And I think a good example of this would be Jaime Lannister.
So I'm gonna push back a little bit here. I think
you don't like this criteria.
Well, I think that there were absolutely a few.
Okay.
Black and white characters, specifically, like main characters, like Ned Stark.
Ned Stark was definitely a good guy.
But and then
I sorry, let me rephrase. I'm not saying it has to be all gray characters. I'm saying a lot of them are gray characters, meaning you can argue for or against them and have very good debates about their personalities and their moralities.
Okay. Because I was like, if you think about it, there were actually a lot of people that were mostly just assholes. Like,
Stannis was evil.
Stannis wasn't evil. That one we can
argue. He killed his own daughter.
Yeah, he thought he was doing it for right reasons. But I'm thinking, like, an absolutely evil person, Ramsay Bolton, right?
Oh, yes, for sure.
Okay. And then, like, you could also say that Cersei didn't, and also Tywin Lannister, didn't really have any redeeming qualities.
Mm-hmm.
But
do you understand what I was trying to?
Yeah,
what
yeah.
I was trying to.
Yeah, you don't. You're saying that you don't want just like good team versus bad team. You don't want them to be comically evil or.
Well, I'm saying this is a characteristic good. That I can see in another show that wants to be the next Game of Thrones.
Right.
This is something that we like about Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what people liked about Game of Thrones. I mean. The first season, I felt, was pretty good.
They adapted that really well.
Yeah. There were obviously some budget things that changed stuff from the books to the show.
We're not going to get into that.
But anyway.
Criteria number three, I think a characteristic of GOT. I'm just going to say GOT from now on. Intricate soap-like stories. You're gonna have very dramatic stories about warring families and royal politics.
I think this is actually probably the key thing, is that there need to be some very well together weaved interlocking plot points. But they need to sort of, I don't want to say organically, but they can't feel shoehorned together either. It's gotta be sort of a careful balance of these things are related together, and not by it shouldn't feel clunky, and that's a tough thing to do. But yeah, I think that is probably one of the biggest things as far as a characteristic of this show itself, to be able to become something like a Game of Thrones.
Criteria number four, high quality production value. And this ties in with characteristic number five, $1 million budgets. But what I mean by production value is they're not skimping on the set design. They're not skimping on costume design, music, original music composition, the props, oh my god, those weapons. Like, I'm sure those weapons were hella expensive to make for so many people, even the extras, right? So, high quality production value kind of ties in with the $1 million budgets. I did a little bit of research, and obviously we know HBO spent a lot of money on Game of Thrones, and we don't have exact numbers, but we have approximations. So pretty much every article that I mention on this episode, I will make sure to include the links in the description so that anyone listening can, you know, reference them later if they would like. This is from movies.stackexchange.com. Someone asked, how much did Game of Thrones cost to produce, comma, in total? And then someone did the math based on, you know, previous articles. So seasons 1 to 5 was about $300 million. Season 6 and 7 was about $170 million. Season 8 was $15 million per episode, and there was only 6 episodes. So that was $90 million. So when you add those numbers together, you get approximately $560 million for the whole show to produce.
Which is, you know, the equivalent of 2 really expensive blockbuster movies. But, I mean, I feel like that's reasonably good money that you spent for like the amount of, you know, merchandise and everything else that you were able to sell out of it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Merchandise, convention appearances.
I don't know how much money HBO gets out of convention appearances, but...
I guess it's primarily licensing and merchandise. Then.
It's the licensing and stuff that they were able to do. And all the, you know, HBO subscriptions while it was
subscriptions,
running.
Subscriptions, yeah, yeah. So those are the five characteristics, criteria that I kind of identified as...
You mentioned something to me earlier, and it wasn't on your list here, but I think it was actually quite important.
What did I say?
The fact that the episodes didn't all release simultaneously.
Oh, right. Okay, I was going to bring this up with The Witcher, which I'm going to get into right now. So in my research, I found a bunch of contenders that other critics thought that could potentially be the next Game of Thrones. And we're only going to talk about four. And the first one is The Witcher, which season one came out December of 2019. And we know there's going to be a season two. Obviously, I think Netflix recently dropped a season two teaser. But yes, what you just said, the thing that I think was a disadvantage for The Witcher, which makes it not the next GOT, is that the way Netflix works is they drop all of the episodes at once. So you're cutting out the suspense in between episodes, and you're cutting out fan discussions that kind of keep the show alive in the people's conversations.
Right. So let me be clear. I don't, as a fan, I prefer what Netflix does. Give me all the episodes and then I can watch them when I want. Binge the show, right? This is the bingeables.
Yes, yes, I know. I'm sorry.
But I think your point is very valid in that, and you can see this working to great effect for Disney right now with WandaVision and then The Winter Soldier and now Loki. Like, they're dropping an episode every week, and it's staying, like, it's keeping people invested in the show. For, you know, okay, like you said, you're driving fan conversation and things, and the fans are then sort of advertising the show for you because of, you know, coming up with theories and things that, you know, what's going to happen next. So, I think that's actually a sort of a big thing. If you want to make the next Game of Thrones, you have to give it time to get people to go, hey, this show is really good. You should catch it, right? We're only four episodes into the season. You can catch up pretty quickly, right? Because for a lot of these things, it's like if someone watches The Witcher and then they start recommending it, people are like, well, how many episodes is it? Well, it's 8 or 10 or whatever it is right now. I forget how many were in that season.
I think it was 8.
But what's typically going to happen is it's people that watch the first season were like, yeah, this was awesome. They'll watch the second season, and if it's awesome, they'll go, hey, you should watch this. But now there's 16 episodes, right? And so that's sort of daunting to some people, and they're like, maybe later or something. So if there's more of a chance for people to go, oh, well, the season 2 just started. You can catch up on season 1 and then... You know, there's only one or two episodes of season 2 out right now. You can easily, like, catch up before episode 3 or before episode 4. But when you're releasing them all at once, which, again, I prefer, it does make it harder for the show to catch on. And I think that's... So if I was looking at this list, I'd say the two things are going to be these intricate plots that relate to each other. And... just the timing of the release of the show episodes, like, really make a difference.
So production value
matters. But I mean, if I'm watching season 1 of Game of Thrones, like, it has to not be shit, but it doesn't have to look like a movie.
It improved over time.
It did. And I mean, part of my issue with season 1 was that I could, because I had like read the book, like I saw the first, I think three or six episodes of season one. And I was like, oh, okay, I'm all caught up. Let me read the books. And so then I read the books and then came back to season one. And I'm like, oh, this is all sort of wrong. And yeah. I could see where, you know, they had cut things for production value. But, you know, in the beginning, as long as the production doesn't look terrible, I think it will work. And so if you look at The Witcher, I think it's done very well on that front so far. In fact, they've gone so far as to give Yennefer purple eyes, where the Game of Thrones was like, Targaryens are supposed to have purple eyes. Nah, people won't believe that. We're not doing it.
So one thing I want to mention, I forgot to say this earlier for The Witcher and for all of these other shows we'll talk about. I like comparing fantasy shows, but at the same time, like, Game of Thrones is just one of those once-in-a-while phenomenon, and I think it's going to be... You can't really compare 8 seasons of this incredibly fantastic show to 1 season of The Witcher. Like, it's just not an even ground to compare on, but these characteristics I brought up is kind of what I was aiming for the comparisons.
Well, I feel like a lot of people are going to go, you mean 5 seasons of a good show and then three seasons of a mess show.
Well, this is not the episode to discuss fan discourse over the 8th season, but...
Well, it's not even just the 8th season, though. A lot of people are like, yeah, it started going downhill in season 6, and we started, you know, we were like, okay, whatever, it's going to pay off in the end, and then season 7 went even further afield, and they were like, okay, it's fine, it's going to pay off in season 8, and then it didn't pay off in season 8, and everyone's like, 3 years of shit, thanks. But it was still, like, because those first 5 seasons were, you know, really good TV, now, here's a question I would ask as far as criteria go. I know we're talking about The Witcher, but one of the things that I know that drew in a lot of people was the sex position of Game of Thrones, like, where they would do exposition through sex scenes.
Like, oh, yeah, the gratuitous nudity, yes.
Yeah, do you think that that's necessary for...
I thought it was unnecessary.
Okay.
At least for GOT, I thought it was unnecessary, especially in the beginning, because I felt like there was too much of it. And then they kind of, throughout the series, they did pull back on the gratuitous nudity in the backgrounds, but there was some nudity in The Witcher. But again, like, it wasn't a whole lot, so... Sorry, did I answer your question?
Well, yeah, you did, because I was wondering whether you thought that, and not necessarily, well, you answered it for yourself, but I wanted to know whether you thought it was necessary for a wider audience to pick it up. Like,
the audience for Game of Thrones is so vast. You've got people who are really into it, like me, and then you've got the general public who just kind of watch it but don't really pick up the details as intricately as the community does, if that makes sense.
Okay.
I hate this quote, but it's re-quoted so many times. That Deadwood actor, geez, what was his name? I should know this. Ian? Yeah, Ian McShane. So he is famous for quoting, not just for his filmography, obviously, but for Game of Thrones, he was famous for the quote, you know, it's got tits and dragons. And that's what appeals to, like, a wider audience outside of the Game of Thrones community.
So that's what I was asking. Like,
I know. But so personally, I think the gratuitous nudity isn't necessary, like, you know.
Well, that's the definition of gratuitous.
The nudity is too much of it, kind of turns me off, But, you know, here and there is fine. But if you're asking if it's necessary, if it should be another criteria, then I suppose then yes.
Okay. Because that was my question, was do you think if you want to be as successful as Game of Thrones, like, do you need to throw in the nudity? How much of a driving factor is that?
I don't know.
I think you're probably right.
I can see it, and obviously it's happened in The Witcher a little bit.
And I'll tell you, that's one of the things that like has me coming back to The Witcher, like, yeah. Nudity. But, I mean, I also feel like The Witcher is, I feel, a little truer to the source material.
So far. We don't know yet how season 2 is going to end up.
Yeah.
Are they going to stick to the video game and the book plots? Are they going to diverge and do their own thing?
Well, so that's the weird thing about The Witcher is that it's already been adapted to a form that is probably better than a television show, because with a video game, you can, like, the story is sort of your own. There are certainly elements of the plot that every player is going to experience, but the way that the video game is set up, or the video games, I should say, are set up, is that there are choices that can be made that affect the plot down the line, and you get to make that choice for the character, whereas with television, it's, you know, passive, right? You are watching the story. You're not participating in the story. So I find it a little strange that they're going from a video game to a TV show. I have to assume that it's the popularity of the video game, because I didn't even know that there were books until the TV show, and I was like, oh, the video game was based off books, and then the TV show, you know, the books got popular because of the video game.
Poland is very proud.
I think you're coming down on sort of the side that The Witcher isn't going to be the next Game of Thrones.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
And
it's too soon to tell, / I don't think it will be it.
I feel that way just because sort of the hype around the show.
There was not a lot of hype with, like, the general public.
Well, and the fact that, didn't it release back in late 2019, right?
Yeah, December 2019.
So then, like, people would have sort of expected the next season to be around a year and a half later, but, you know, the pandemic sort of screwed everyone on that. So a lot of, like, things that started before the pandemic, there's just no way for them to make up that lost ground necessarily.
I mean, you know, you could put in a lot of marketing dollars.
You could.
But it doesn't necessarily mean that.
Right. So Netflix would really, like, Netflix may not also care, right?
Because they're making so many other shows.
Yeah, it's like they only care if there's a huge proportion of their subscriber base that only subscribes because of The Witcher, right? If people just keep their subscriptions anyway, whether or not there's any new Witcher stuff, then they don't really care whether it comes out to be the next Game of Thrones. They kind of do because of, you know, the merchandising. But they also may not have merchandising rights on this.
That's true.
Because yeah. There's, like, that is probably all the book publisher and the author. And that, like, even the video game developer may share in that some. But it's, yeah, I feel like it's less important for Netflix if it becomes that popular. They just need something that's good enough that people are like, yeah, I want to keep my, you know, $9, $10, $13. I have no idea how much Netflix
I think
costs.
It's like $15 or $16 now. It's gone up a lot over the years.
Sure. Who knows?
But
I mean, I should, but I don't.
According to ScreenRant.com, in order to bring the world of The Witcher to life, Netflix spent around $70 to $80 million in the first season. So if there was 8 episodes, it's about $10 million per episode.
That's significantly more than HBO theoretically spent on the good seasons of Game of Thrones. Because the first 5 seasons, right, were $300 million. And here they're saying they spent a third of that almost.
They had high hopes, or Netflix.
Or a fourth of it on just the first season. So,
So kind of to wrap up the Witcher comparisons, my theory, my answer, is it the next Game of Thrones? I'm going to say no, / too soon to tell.
Okay.
What do you think? Are you here?
I think no. Definite
no?
Yeah, like, I prefer The Witcher, to be clear. But I think that it's not going to gain the popularity. Like, it was good enough in season one to do it, but it's been too long. There would have to be a serious, like, season two would have to be amazing, and Netflix would have to sort of break its own coda and go, all right, well, we're going to release episodes weekly or maybe in small chunks. I don't know. But like you all can remember, the Tiger King was popular for about a month because all the episodes were just out there. You need it to be a bit longer than that so that other people can start going, oh, I need to watch that. Okay, cool.
All right, we are going to move on to talk about contender number 2, The Wheel of Time. Now, before, I know, Isaac, this is your thing to talk about.
I have so much to say about this one.
This is your thing to talk about. So the last 3 shows we'll talk about, none of these are out, obviously. These are all of our theories and speculations and predictions.
Okay.
Yeah. So The Wheel of Time is another high fantasy show. This one is going to be put out by Amazon Prime Video.
Okay.
And so far, what we know is that Wheel of Time, according to IMDb, is going to drop in 2021. So obviously the first half of the year is over, so we can expect it in the second half of the year. My guess, maybe closer to like October, November, December-ish, the last quarter of the year.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be colder. People are going to want to be cozying up indoors, and they're going to want to watch TV by the fire. But right. We know season 1 is probably going to drop this year. And then Amazon already renewed it, according to Variety.com. This article came out May 20th, 2021. Wheel of Time renewed for season 2.
Okay, so I want to say that when they first announced, I mean, they've talked about doing a Wheel of Time show for quite some time. When I first heard about it, I was excited. But after finishing the series, there is no way.
We should probably read a summary of what it's about.
Sure. Go for it.
The Wheel of Time is based on the Robert Jordan novels. It was ordered at Amazon back in 2018. The story follows Moraine, who is going to be played by Rosamund Pike. Moraine is a member of the incredibly powerful all-female organization called the
Aes Sedai.
And yeah,
so without giving away anything, it is it's a sort of a take on what if the heroes didn't want to become heroes, and they were forced into it anyway. So specifically, the story is about a bunch of, say, 14 to 17 year olds. And they age over the 14 books to be about 17 to 20. So they're all still fairly young by the end of the series. And the Aes Sedai, of which Moraine is a part, are all women that have an ageless quality to them. So they live for a couple of hundred years, as opposed to normal human life. At first glance, you are unable to tell the age of an Aes Sedai. You'll look and go, ah, she's probably 25. Wait, 45? No, 20. It's tough.
So they're immortal.
They're not immortal.
They're not?
No, they do die, but they die. They don't show age very well. So if you see an Aes Sedai that has gray hair, she's got to be fucking ancient. And when they die, it's not like they die like an old person. There's just like, there was somebody that was alive and now they're dead. Like, it's very sudden. They're just no longer living. The issue with doing this live action is people do age.
Yeah, especially because these characters are, they're late teens, early 20s.
They're supposed to be late teens, and that's very important to the plot. Because a lot of things would be resolved by 40-year-olds. 40-year-olds would be like, oh, okay, let's just sit down and calmly talk about this. Teenagers, on the other hand, are very hot-headed. And it's a major plot point that the people of this Two Rivers area are very, very stubborn. And so if you don't have teens as the main plot points, it sort of gets ridiculous. Like, oh, why won't they just sit down and talk? It makes no sense. And it's because they're stubborn teenagers. And that's important. And then again, because the books are quite long.
It's and 14 books.
There are 14 books, and they're all on the order of Game of Thrones length books. They're all very, very long. So if you think about, they took 5 books from George R.R. Martin and turned it into 8 years of television. Imagine what you'd take with 14 books. The characters just can't avoid aging that long. So I have little hope for this series.
Which makes you very sad.
It does make me sad because I really love The Wheel of Time. It's really good. I suggest everyone read it. Robert Jordan actually died before the series was finished, and Brandon Sanderson took over for the last, what was supposed to be one book, but ended up needing to be 3 books.
Okay. So thank you for that passionate explanation. Let's go back to some of the characteristics. So vast, endless exploration of characters and universe. It sounds like The Wheel of Time easily covers that easily.
Sure.
Gray characters. Are there some gray characters?
Oh my gosh, yes. There is one big bad that is patently evil. But there are plenty of other people that are not in his service that are also shitty.
Okay.
And the stubbornness really plays out a lot. A lot of people may have good intentions, but other people are just not trusting. And so there's a lot of mistrust going on.
Okay. That fulfills criteria number 2. Number 3, would you say there are intricate soap-like stories? Drama. Is there drama?
Yes. There is quite a bit, actually, and it's a lot of, because they're in a medieval-like technology sort of society, there's just a lot of sort of things from history that get muddled, and so there's a lot of misunderstanding because of it, and it Yeah. Yeah, I would definitely say there is, for sure.
Criteria number 4, high quality production value. So we can't speculate on this cuz obviously the show's not out yet, but we can kind of go off of criteria number 5, $1 million budgets. According to MichiganDaily.com, this article was February 16th, 2021. The writer reported that... Dang it, I just had it. There was a... Oh, here it is. Based on some reliable speculation, it is fair to estimate that the show's budget could be around $10 million per episode, if not more.
And here is the argument for making it. Here's another argument for making it animated. You could spend $1.5 million per episode and have it be amazeballs.
I'm having deja vu. I think you brought this up before.
I'm saying, like, if you look, like, right now, so the reluctance, I'm sure, in Hollywood is that people think that animation is for children. But you can see through shows like Archer and Invincible that there is definitely a space for adult animation. And there's no reason to think that just because something is animated, it's for children. And not a lot of people hold that view anymore, except probably baby boomers. so, like, everyone else is going to go... yeah, you could have probably done this better with the 2D animation thing. Especially because in the Wheel of Time, there is magic. It's explained differently, but there are definitely things that are magical that are happening. And in the Game of Thrones, the story was really about magic coming back to the land after having not been there. So early on in the story, there was no magic. There was no need for visual effects or anything crazy, right? You could get away with practical special effects when you needed blood and gore and that sort of thing. With the Wheel of Time, there is, you know, actual magic. And so you will, to make it photorealistic so that you can keep up with the production values that Chinlin has mentioned, it becomes very expensive, you know, hinting at this $10 million an episode, which is why it's preferable for something like this to be animated. Okay, I think I'm good.
Okay, so your theory, decision, whatever, is a no.
That's going to be a no. And I love the Wheel of Time. I really wish it became bigger than Game of Thrones. I just, for a live action show, I don't have much hope. I would love to be proven wrong on this, but I'm not holding my breath.
Okay, I'm not going to make a decision on this because... obviously, you're the expert on this series. Okay, moving on. The Lord of the Rings. This is going to be put out again by Amazon Prime Video. And this is what we know so far. According to IndieWire.com.
Peter Jackson wanted more money?
I'm getting there.
Okay. I didn't know this was going to be a TV show, so this is interesting to me.
Yeah. So I thought you already knew this was a TV show. So Amazon is, they have spent about $450 million on season one. And to put this in perspective with the Lord of the Rings film trilogy, Peter Jackson spent about $280 million. So Amazon has almost doubled the amount that they put into just season one.
Yeah.
What's going through your head?
I was doing the math. It's a little more than two-thirds more.
So it's not twice, but yeah.
It's still significantly more than making three blockbuster huge movies. But the question is, I'm curious, like, who feels like the trilogy isn't the definitive version
Okay. So you want to go back a few more steps and say, why do we even need a television adaptation?
Right. Who's this for?
Well, it's, I mean, Jeff Bezos is a greedy man. So, you know, this IP has fared well in the film industry. So why not translate it to television?
And, you know, we've had this conversation before, and I do think that television, if you're going to move a book to the screen, television is the better medium.
Because of the inherent long-form storytelling. Right, you're expecting things to take a little longer in the 8 episodes, 10-episode seasons.
Right. You can add, in this Lord of the Rings, you can have your Tom Bombadil and all sorts of other characters that were not mentioned in the original trilogy or shown at all.
So story-wise, this is a prequel series. It's going to take place in it. The events of the series is supposed to take place before Fellowship of the Ring is what I read.
What? That makes no sense. But after The Hobbit?
I don't.
I mean, it would have to be. Like, we're just making up a story that happens in between The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings?
I didn't do that deep of a dig.
So, I mean, one, that makes a little more sense in that,
back to the IndieWire article. It says one of the cast members is Morfydd Clark, who is rumored to play a young Galadriel.
Okay.
She was the main elf lady.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Yeah, by Cate Blanchett.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I don't know if that helps you. I haven't rewatched the films in a while.
If that's where they're focusing, that's an interesting. That's actually interesting. So that makes sense. So if you're not going to do anything with the Shire or the Hobbits, right, and you're going to leave those stories to be the movies, right, then if you want something set in the universe, right, you pick some interesting character. And Galadriel is probably a good choice there. Or characters around her.
Focusing on the elves.
Yeah. That makes sense. Because then you get to make up stuff. And it doesn't necessarily have to have any bearing on what happens in the Lord of the Rings trilogy a few years later, or however much later the Fellowship of the Ring happens. So, yeah, that makes sense. And since it's not a retelling of the Fellowship of the Ring, then
I feel like if they chose to retell the film stories, like, it would just be a flop because it'd be too close for a comparison.
Yeah, it would be like, okay, well, why are we
putting in millions of dollars to tell a story that's already been told?
And that's what I assumed it was originally, and that's why I had this question. Now,
I understand.
Okay, so I think they're probably not constrained by a lot of source material. So I feel like this could do well. It's going to depend, again, I keep hating to harp on this, but, you know, about the release schedule, like, are you going to do it 1 week at a time, or are you going to drop it all at once?
All of us watchers. Amazon released episodes weekly for The Boys.
Yeah.
So I can totally see them doing that for the Lord of the Rings TV show.
I think so too.
I mean, some people aren't going to like it, but I think it will still build upon the success.
Yeah.
And then Deadline.com, this article was from November 18, 2019, so 2 years ago. We already know that Lord of the Rings will be 2 seasons. So they renewed it early, even though season one,
even though season one hadn't released to the public, they still get to see it and go, okay, yeah, you did a good job of putting together a TV show. We'll definitely renew this.
Mm-hmm. And then I guess another thing that Game of Thrones fans might like, if they also like Lord of the Rings, one of the writers, Brian Cogman, he's done a lot of the most popular episodes of Game of Thrones. He is consulting on the Lord of the Rings TV shows. So, okay. I don't know. I don't know if that helps. It might help for some Game of Thrones skeptics for these upcoming fantasy shows.
It might not. Because
if he's just a consultant, like, you know, they either take his feedback or they don't.
And also, like, sort of the criticism of Game of Thrones is like, well, once you guys ran out of source material, like, it kind of went to shit. So, like, why should I trust you as a writer?
Well, for this one, like you just said, this one isn't going to focus on source material.
Right, but what I'm saying is their thought would be, you sucked without source material. You don't have any source material. Why is this going to be any good?
I don't remember the exact episodes of GOT that Brian Cogman wrote, so it may not be the case for
him. Yeah, it may not be the case for him, but, you know, I could see people making that argument.
True, true. So, Lord of the Rings, we've got a little bit more hope for.
Yeah, I mean,
I wouldn't call it a yes, but we are more optimistic about this one.
It could, yeah, it could. It has at least the potential to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So last but not least, well, at least to me, it's going to be least because I didn't find that much info about it. So we don't even know when it's going to come out. Netflix is planning to do a remake of the Chronicles of Narnia series by C.S. Lewis. And apparently it's going to be, they're going to make a TV show and movies for Chronicles of Narnia. It's going to be multi-project. And the only article that I could find that was recent and could give me more information was from whatsonnetflix.com. This is from April 18, 2021. And let's see. So this said, okay, so news about Netflix teaming up with C.S. Lewis Company dropped back in October 2018. So before Game of Thrones was ended, and obviously they were planning this for a long time. Netflix has a multi-year deal whereby it will have multiple film and series projects on the go, all based on the books of Narnia exclusively. In terms of who is behind the project, all I see that is definitive is, according to IMDb Pro, Mark Gordon, Joseph Gresham, Vincent Sieber will be involved in the upcoming projects. And there is a creative architect for the Narnia universe. Netflix pulled Disney Pixar's Coco co-writer Matthew Aldrich, who will be creative architect and oversee the development for all of the films and shows. They announced this June 12th of 2019, so, well, I'm behind, but we don't know that much yet, so we don't know if it's one show, three movies, two shows, five movies. Like, wait, how many books are there?
I actually have no idea. All I know of the Chronicles of Narnia is from the movie that I used to watch on PBS as a kid, and the more recent films, or movies. And I know that C.S. Lewis at least was rumored to be in a writing competition with, goodness, what's his name? The author of the Lord of the Rings, Tolkien. He was in a writing competition with Tolkien, where Tolkien was like, I can write it and it doesn't need to be all about Christianity and it will be popular. And C.S. Lewis is like, I'll make mine all about Christianity and it will be more popular.
So they had a pissing contest.
Essentially, yeah, I think so.
To answer my question, There are 7 books in the Chronicles of Narnia series.
Okay.
So it could be a show of 7 seasons, or it could be a show of 7 seasons, and then they do like a spin-off movie or something.
Well, here's actually what I was thinking. They've tried to do a movie series already.
They did 3 movies.
You could sort of recreate the movie series and have a TV show that is more like the Lord of the Rings TV show, which is set in the universe, but there's no source material for. So you can start sort of making up stuff in that vein. That might be a way that they go with it.
Did you read the books?
No.
Okay, me either. I remember watching the first movie because it's one of the earlier movies that James McAvoy was in, and I love that man. He was Mr. Tumnus, the half-goat man.
Ah, yes.
Yeah. I did not watch the second or third. I think by then I just kind of lost interest, so I should finish the movies before I say anything else, or even before the show comes out just in general. But this is all the details that we do know. We don't know when it's coming out. I don't even think they have started production, so it might be another year or two before we actually see this come to light.
But as far as the question of whether it's going to be the next Game of Thrones as a property, I don't think so.
Because I agree. I do not think so. And I think it's because, I mean, the movies were more targeted for children and for, like, a family. And obviously, Game of Thrones is not going to be a show. Game of Thrones was never a show that I would have watched with my family. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't think so.
Yeah. I mean, it's clearly popular, and you know, the same thing could be said about The Lord of the Rings. It's a popular franchise already, but I don't think these particular incarnations of media for them are going to make them that much more popular. Because Game of Thrones was, you know, it was a reasonably popular book before it was on HBO, but like, it became a huge phenomenon after the show. And I don't think that these necessarily will. I think the Wheel of Time has the most potential, but...
No, Lord of the Rings.
No, I'm saying Wheel of Time has the most potential, but I don't think it's going to be executed well enough.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Lord of the Rings is probably the one that has like the most likelihood of doing it, but I still think it's sort of a slim chance.
Okay. Good phrasing. Likelihood, like probability.
Yeah.
There's a better chance of that one succeeding.
Right.
Okay. Well, that wraps up our discussion on what's the next Game of Thrones topic. This was a fun one. I was thinking about it for a while, and obviously it's very early, so all we can do is speculate, but I hope the Wheel of Time thing works out for you, obviously, because it's your favorite.
If any of you studio execs are listening, just for any of these properties, just go ahead and animate them. It's cheaper. You don't have to pay off the nose for special effects, and yeah, you get to control the age of your characters much more easily. And, you know, adults are not afraid of animation. Just throwing that out there. The most successful Kickstarter ever is for an animation show about Critical Role. So there's certainly a market. Just saying.
And you can still show violent gore through animation.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look at Invincible, right? Like, if you need gore, you can still do it.
Invincible, Castlevania, Blood of Zeus.
Yeah.
Those 3 that we covered definitely had some violent gore.
Yeah. So, I mean, and, you know, if you want nudity, you can still draw penises. Like, it's not a hard thing to do.
All right. Until next time. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Bingeables podcast.
Leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you enjoy listening to our podcast, please consider giving us your support on Patreon for as little as $1 a month. Just visit us on patreon.com/bingeablespod. That's patreon.com/bingeablespod.
You can connect with us on Twitter at BingeablesPod, or you can email us at BingeablesPod@gmail.com.
Until next time. And the music you're listening to is Shaving Mirror by Kevin MacLeod.